The following lecture by Rabbi Yitzchak Ginzburg was recorded live and is presented to you free of charge by Galilei Institute. Your donation will help us to bring an ever-expanding selection of quality audio lectures by Rabbi Ginzburg. Galilei Institute is a non-profit organization and all donations are tax-deductible in the USA. To donate, just click on the Donate button on the Inner Dimension homepage at www.inner.org. www.inner.org or email us at inner@inner.org.
The very last portion of the Torah is the blessing that Moses blesses the tribes of Israel. After he completes blessing all of the tribes and then blessing the whole people in general and says his last words, then the Torah begins to relate the process by which Moses passed away from our physical plane of reality, giving over the leadership of the people to his successor, his disciple, Yehoshua. Now this is the last chapter of the Torah. It's Deuteronomy chapter 34. Verse 33 is the blessings that Moses blesses the tribes, the whole people, and then 34, the very last chapter, is the story of what happened afterwards. The chapter has 12 verses to it. The last 8 verses are actually verses that describe the passing away, the death of Moses himself. And therefore, since it's very seemingly strange and difficult to understand how Moses can write about himself dying, so there are actually two opinions of our sages who actually inscribed and wrote those last 8 verses of the Torah. Mm-hmm. One opinion says that Joshua wrote the last, that God spoke to Joshua and he dictated to Joshua, to Yehoshua bin Nun, the last 8 verses of the Torah. Another opinion says that the whole Torah was given in this, all called the Torah of Moshe, meaning that Moses had to write the whole Torah. So he wrote it, but he wrote it with tears, as God dictated the words, and the words were that begins with the word Vayamot Sham Moshe, that Moses died there. Moses, the servant of God. And from that point on, Moses wrote his last 8 verses himself with tears, as dictated to him by God himself. In any event, those are the last 8 verses. Now before that, in the description of the process, there are 4 verses before, because this whole chapter is composed of 12 verses, meaning that there are previous 4 verses of what happened before that, before Moses actually died. So the 4 verses read as follows. It says that Moses went up to the plains of Moab, which is the site of the mountain of Nebo. Now we have, in our meditations, discussed many mountains. Now we meet a new mountain, which is called Har Nebo, the mountain of Nebo. That's the mountain that Moses passed away on. Just as it's not clear who wrote these last 8 verses of the Torah that we mentioned a moment before, so it's also we know that the gravesite of Moses is not known. In the idiom of the sages, if you're above on this mountain, it appears to be below you. If you're below, it appears to be above you. There's something totally paradoxical and unknown about the site of Moses. That's because the site is one of, just like the concept of touching and not touching that we discussed last week in Parashat Ha'azino, that it's from the 50th gate, which is the level of consciousness and divine knowledge that Moses was given at this very moment that he is passing away from our physical plane of reality. Even the fact that he is not achieving the 50th gate is alluded to in the name of this mountain. This special mountain is called Nebo. Nebo is spelled Nun Bet Vav, which is read Nun Bo. Nun is in it. And that the essential essence of this mountain is Nun. Nun Bo. Nun is the 50th gate, the Nogea Ve'ino Nogea. the fact that you can't see clearly identified point clearly where the grave site of Moses is. For the same reason, you can't know clearly who wrote those last eight verses of the Torah. So once more, it begins now, the whole portion begins that Moses went up to the mountain of Nebo, to the very apex, summit of the mountain, Rosh HaPisgah, which was overlooking the city of Jericho. He's still on the eastern side of the Jordan River, but he goes up to this high mountain of Nebo that he's about to pass away there on this mountain, and he is now overlooking Jericho. And then the verse says that Hashem showed him the whole of the land of Israel from the Gilad, which is to the north in the Golan Heights, until Dan, until the tribe of Dan, to the portion of the land which is inherited by Dan. Dan is one of the 12 tribes. Now Dan also, he inherits a part of the land which is to the north, towards the Hermon that we were talking about. So actually, if you picture someone else standing on the top of a mountain, that's now our meditation. Our meditation this week is identifying ourselves totally with Moshe Rabbeinu at these last moments of his physical life on earth. And having him stand now on the summit, the top of the mountain that he's about to pass away on, and God himself now comes to him and shows him the promised land. The promised land is the epitome of the desire of his whole life, because his whole life is in order to enter, to bring the Jewish people in, and himself to enter, because he knows that if he would be able to enter, that would bring about the true and complete redemption of all the sparks, and this is the purpose of his whole life, just that Hashem says that we, you will have to wait to your final incarnation as Mashiach, but not in this incarnation, you're not yet the Mashiach, and therefore I'm only allowing you to see it. And actually through seeing it himself, Moses projects from his very own, the power of his very own eyes, his own presence, his eternal presence into the land of Israel. So once more, the last thing that God now does is that he shows Moses, Moshe Rabbeinu, which now we're trying, each and every one of us, to put ourselves into Moses, to be one cell of his spiritual presence. And now God is showing us the promised land that we're not allowed to enter yet, but we're being shown. By seeing it, we're projecting the power of our own eyesight to the promised land. Now we're not seeing it from the point of Har Hermon, we're seeing it from the point of Har Nebo, which is to the east of the land. So it means that if I turn my head now to the right, I'm looking at the north of the land. And if I turn my head to the left, so I'm looking to the south. Usually with a person is fed, the directions of the Torah are normally that if a person faces the sun rise, which is the east, then his right is the south, and his left is the north. But in this particular context, Moses is now facing the west. The Shekhinah, the divine presence, is manifest in the west. But actually, when we enter the Holy Temple in Jerusalem, so we enter from level to level, from east, also from east to west. The Holy of Holies, the high point of the temple, is to the west. So here also, Moshe Rabbeinu is looking to the west. If you're looking to the west, your right is the north, and your left is the south. So the way that Hashem is now showing Moshe Rabbeinu the land, the promised land of Israel, is also in such a way that he begins by showing him by telling Moses, as it were, to turn your head to the right, which is seeing at the north of Eretz Israel, and then little by little, moving your head from right to left until you see the south of Eretz Israel. That is the process that's now taking place in these last, or this is the first four verses of the last portion, the last chapter of the Torah. So the first place that he sees, The first tribe that he sees is the tribe of Dan, which means the inheritance of this tribe. Then it goes on to say, "Ve'et kol Naphtali," Hashem showed Moses the whole tribe of Naphtali. And then it goes on to say, the Naphtali is around the Kinneret, the Sea of Galilee. And then he went further to the south, "Ve'et Eretz Ephraim u'Menasheh," he showed him the land, the inheritance of Ephraim. Ephraim is Shechem, and Menasheh is also there. The part of Menasheh, which is in Eretz Israel, is also there to the north, still to the north of Jerusalem. And then finally, "Ve'et kol Eretz Yehuda ad Hayam Acharon." And then he showed him the whole land, the whole inheritance of Judah, which is further to the south. It's Jerusalem, and it extends all the way to the west, to the Mediterranean. And that's why it says he showed him the land of Judah, of Yehuda, until the Yam HaAchron, which is the final sea. The final sea is interpreted by the sages, and Rashi also brings it here in the Pshat of the Pasuk. It also is an allusion to the final day, because the word sea is like the word day. Sea is Yam, and day in Hebrew is Yom. Meaning that not only was Hashem physically showing Moshe Rabbeinu the whole promised land, which is the essence of the desire of his whole life, he was also showing him all of Jewish history, what's going to be until the final day of Mashiach and the resurrection, and until the end of all days. Then it goes on to say that after that he went further to the south, which is further turning his head, as it were, to the left, and he showed him the whole Negev, which is the Negev is the desert, Kikar Bigatyurecho, and all the way down to Jericho, which actually is facing Jericho, Yirat Marim Adsor, also to the south. And then that's the end of the third verse of these 12 verses. Then the fourth verse, which is the verse just before, it then begins to say that Moses actually died. So the fourth verse reads that Hashem spoke. These are the last words that God speaks to Moses. He says, "This is the earth that I have sworn to Abraham and to Yitzchak and to Yaakov, saying to your seed, to your children, I will give this. I have shown you this, the land of Israel, with your eyes, but there you will not pass over." That very word, vider, v'shama, is a permutation of Moshe, of Moses. So even though I've shown you with your eyes, and you have projected your very self there, because there is you, but physically in this incarnation you will not pass over there. That's the last word that God says to Moses. And then, and that's the end of the fourth verse, and then the fifth verse begins, and Moses died. Right, so now what we're going to focus our meditation upon, is in addition to the general image of now ourselves as Moses standing on the Mount of Nebo and being shown by God himself the whole promised land with all of Jewish history, from our right to our left, which is from the north of the land to the south. In this whole description, there are five of the 12 tribes that are mentioned explicitly. And this is a very significant observation, because the land of Israel has all 12 tribes to it. So why in this description does God point out only five of the inheritances? There must be something special about this flow, because when it's all a flow from north to south, the first tribe that is explicitly mentioned is Dan, and then the next one is Naphtali, and then come Ephraim and Menasheh, which are two brothers, the sons of Yosef, but each one is a tribe in its own right. And then finally, the last one is Yehuda, which is the real prince and the king of all of the tribes. That Mashiach comes from Yehuda. But actually, the first one that's mentioned is Dan. We're told in Kabbalah that the commander-in-chief of the army of the Mashiach comes from Dan. And in Jacob's blessing of the tribes, he compares Dan to Yehuda. So it begins with Dan, and it ends with Yehuda. And in the middle, there's Naphtali, Ephraim, and Manasseh. Another obvious point is that the first two tribes that are mentioned here, there are only five, once more, there are only five of the 12 tribes that are mentioned here for some deep reason that we'll try to get some sense of. The first two tribes are themselves brothers. Those are the two sons of Bilhah. The maidservant of Rachel, Imenu, are Dan and Naphtali. Then the next two tribes are both from Rachel, the two sons of Yosef, Ephraim and Manasseh. And then finally, the last one, Yehuda, the king, is from Leah. But obviously there's a relation here. The first Dan and Naphtali, which are a pair, and then Ephraim and Manasseh, which is a pair. And then finally it comes to the essential one of all the tribes, which is Yehuda. That's the king from Yehuda, and also the temple, which is the high point of the land of Israel, is built in the inheritance of the tribe of Yehuda, Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, and the Beit HaMikdash. After saying Yehuda, then the description or the panorama of this whole, we can call actually this whole meditation the panorama of Israel that God showed to Moses at the very last moment of his life. So the panorama extends even further south, but it doesn't mention any other tribe. As we know, that to the south of Judah, physically, was the tribe of Shimon, but Shimon isn't mentioned at all. Even in the very blessings at the beginning of this week's Parashah of Zot HaBracha, Shimon is not explicitly mentioned for a reason that Rashi explains to us. But here also, obviously, the panorama includes all the 12 tribes. But it's very significant that only five of them are mentioned explicitly. So the first thing that we'll do in order to try to understand the meaning of these five tribes is to once more to see what we can learn from relating to the numerical values of the names. If we take the five tribes that Moses was shown after he blesses all of them, so it's Dan, Naphtali, Ephraim, Manasseh, Yehuda. If we sum those names, the values of those names, Dan is 54, Naphtali is 570, Ephraim is 331, Manasseh 395, Yehuda is 30. If we add it all together, it will arrive at the number 1380. But 1380 is also very, very closely related to Moses himself. Just as we saw that at the very end, it says there. The third last word that God said to Moses, Vishama lo ta'avor. And that word there is actually a permutation of Moses himself. Here, the value of these five tribes that he was explicitly shown is 1380, which is four times Moses. Because Moses, Moshe, equals 345. And 4 times 345 is 1380. 1380 is just these five tribes of the 12 tribes of Israel. As a multiple of Moses is not reflected by some other summation, some other group of tribes. Just these five give you 4 times Moses. Why 4? If it would be 5 times Moses, then I would say that the average value of each tribe is Moshe. But the 5 tribes together produce 4 times Moshe. So we're talking Kabbalah, that what that means is that since Moshe has 3 letters to his name, so you can write a name in Hebrew, theoretically in any language, but it's explained in reference to Hebrew, that any word, or especially a name, evolves by first having the first letter by itself, and then adding another letter, and then adding another letter until you complete the word. And it devolves in the opposite way, that you have, say, the whole, in this case, the whole 3 letters of the word, and then the first letter disappears and you're left only with the 2 letters, and then the second letter also disappears and you're left only with the last letter, and then finally it all disappears. So every word, and especially every name, which is a soul, it's born, it's just like the soul is born into the world, and it deceases, it leaves the world. which is exactly now what's happening to Moshe. One also of the paradoxical things that we said, everything about the passing of Moshe is paradoxical. It's yes and no simultaneously. It's touching and not touching. It's above and it's below. It's Moses wrote it or Joshua wrote it. It's all paradoxical. So one of the other paradoxical things about the death of Moses, that we know that he died and he was born on the very same day. And the fact that he was Zion and he born on the very same day, which is Zion Adar, the 7th of Adar, what taught me is that not just that he was once upon a time, 120 years before he died, he was born, but actually he continues to be reborn on that day. It means that simultaneously with his physical death, he's reborn once more. And he continuously is reborn. Now, being reborn is writing his name, Mem, Memshin, Memshin Hei. That's called the appearance of the name. At first, the first letter appears by itself, then it's another letter is added, and then a third letter is added, and then it's Moshe. And this simultaneously also is disappearing. The disappearing of a name or a word is represented by the opposite process. At first, you have all three letters, and then the first letter disappears, and then the second letter also disappears, and you're left just with the third letter, and then finally it all disappears. Now, if both of those processes of appearance and disappearance are summed together, then the total sum will be four times the name Moses, because Moses has three letters. Any word that you would take and do both processes to, so the sum of both processes will always be the word itself times one more than the number of letters in the word. For instance, if I would do the identical process to Hashem's essential name, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, and first write Yud, and then Yud-Kei, and then Yud-Kei-Vav, and then Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, that equals 72. If I'll do that's called the appearance. The disappearance is the opposite. It's writing first Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, which is 26, and then K, Vav, K, which is 16, and then Vav, K, which is 11, and then finally K by itself, which is A, which gives me 58 altogether. If I add those two numbers together, 72 and 58, I'll come to 130. But 130 is 5 times 26. 26 is Hashem's name. What is 5? Why is it 5 times and not 4 times and not 6 times? Because very obviously, if you write it out, you'll see it clearly in front of yourself. The sum of these two processes is actually one time more the number of letters of the word or the name that you're applying these processes to. So in the case of Hashem's name, since Hashem's name has four letters, so both together will equal 5 times 26. In the case of Moshe, that Moshe has three letters, so both together will equal 4 times Moshe. So the value of these five tribes is this simultaneous, is the secret of the simultaneous birth and death of Moshe Rabbeinu at the very same moment. And that's one very deep secret about the reason that these five tribes are mentioned. But that's just a secret of taking all of the numerical values of the names and adding them together. It doesn't yet teach us in particular what is this series of these five tribes and not one of the other seven tribes that is not mentioned here. So in order to understand that a little bit deeper, we're taught in Sefer Yetzirah, which is the first classic of Kabbalah, that every tribe has a sense, an inner sense of the soul to him. Normally we think that there are five senses that the human soul is blessed with. But in Sefer Yetzirah, we're taught that there are 12 different senses, and each tribe has a different sense. So, if Moses is now being shown these tribes, so it's all through the sense of sight. The sense of sight is actually the sense of the first tribe of Israel to be born, which is Reuven, whose name literally means see. Reuven means see a son who has now been born. See the virtue, the merit of this son who has now just been born. But it's from the word to see. So Reuven, the first son of Jacob, represents the sense of sight. The second son is his brother Shimon, who means to hear. That's the meaning of his name. We see that the first two tribes of Israel, as they were born, were first sight and then hearing. The first sense of sight. Now, here in these five tribes that Moses was shown, we don't have either Reuven or Shimon. They're not part of this five. But the sense that he is now seeing everything is through the sense of Reuven, which is sight. But first his sight touches Dan. Now, what is the sense of Dan in Kabbalah, in Sefer Yetzirah? His sense is a very mysterious sense. It's called the sense of anger. Now, anger we would think is a very bad thing, is a negative thing. But it says that anger sometimes can be good if a person is angry at evil, in order to eradicate and do away with evil. Several weeks ago in Parashat Ve'etchanan, when we were talking about the different manifestations of Mashiach, upon meditating on the word Echad, we saw that one manifestation of Mashiach is the smoke or the fire in the chimney, which is actually burning away evil. That's the very beginning of the Messianic revelation, that he burns away evil. That sense is the fire of the wrath of the nostrils, which is an idiom that appears throughout the Bible, of God when God is involved with eradicating or burning away the evil that exists in the world. That sense is the sense of Dan. That's for that very reason. Dan, from Dan, will be the commander-in-chief of the army of the Mashiach. But first the army has to conquer the land and has to fight and destroy the evil that exists in the land and throughout the whole world. So this is the reason to explain that the very first tribe, that everything now that Moses is being shown, this whole panorama of this week's meditation, is Moses he's now leaving his first incarnation, but he's actually being shown his final incarnation. He's being shown how he will return to the world in our generation as the Mashiach. And each and every one of us has a spark, has a part in this revelation. And the first thing that he's shown the tribe of Dan, which is this holy wrath in order to eradicate the evil forces in the world. But then he immediately turns to Naphtali, which is his brother. What is the sense of Naphtali? So this is very, very beautiful. It says that the sense of Naphtali is a sense of laughter. It's joy and laughter. Tzchok. Husha tzchok, that's the term in Hebrew. That upon the victory of the conquest of and the eradication of evil, and then begins the ability to, as we've mentioned many times, to incorporate whatever reality truly exists within what previously was seen to be evil, is now able to be taken and incorporated into the good. So that produces in the soul tremendous joy and actually laughter. The laughter of what's called the shell becoming incorporated in the core. That's the sense of Naphtali. So the first thing that Moses has shown is the sense of Dan, which is called the Chush HaRoges. That's the term in Hebrew, Roges or Kaas, but the real term is Roges, based on the verse in Tehillim, which was Rikzuvatech, that will become angry at your own evil inclination and thereby do not sin. And the Dan is the ability to overcome the evil inclination simply by holy anger against the evil. I don't want to be associated with you at all. And leave me, I have nothing to do with you at all. That's the Roges of Rikzuba Techtao of Dan. That's the beginning. Then comes the laughter of the victory, which is the pleasure of the victory. Then afterwards comes the sense of Ephraim. The sense of Ephraim is the sense of matrimony, actually, of procreation. It's called the procreative sense, the union, the marital union. In relation to the Jewish people in the land of Israel, after the victory and after the laughter was after the war and after the victory, then comes the settling of the land. The settling of the land is compared throughout the Bible to a marriage, the real marriage between the Jewish people and the land of Israel. And that procreates, because to settle the land means to have many, even on the physical plane, means to have many, many children. You know, you have this, the people has to multiply and prosper in order to fully settle the land. And to have many, many children, that the chush, there's an inner sense of that, there's a sense of procreation, which is the sense of Ephraim. Then begins to be manifest the sense of the Mashiach himself, the leader, in relation to leading his people and leading the world. We're taught that the Mashiach himself, the most important sign of the Mashiach, he does not judge through his sight, through his sense of sight, nor through his sense of hearing. He judges through his sense of smell. He has a deep intuition of truth and falsehood, and of right and wrong. And who is right? If he has two people that are arguing. So the right, it says he doesn't have to see them, he doesn't have to hear them, he just has to smell them. That's the idiom. It says he smells and he judges by smell. That sense of smell is the sense of Menashe, the next of the five tribes that Moses has shown here. So first he's shown the sense of Dan, then the sense of Naphtali. Dan is the holy wrath. Then the sense of laughter of Naphtali, then the sense of procreation, which is settling the land, which is the sense of Ephraim, and now he's shown the sense of smell, which is the smell of the lead of the Mashiach himself. Finally, he's shown Yehuda, which is really now focusing on the Mashiach himself and on the temple itself. What sense is that? It's called the sense of speech. But the sense of speech is also the sense of leadership. The sense of speech is the new Torah. After the Mashiach properly judges the people, then everything is ready and clear for the Mashiach now to reveal to the Jewish people and to the whole world through his speech the new dimension of the Torah that Hashem has been waiting since the very outset, since the moment of creation, to reveal to us. For that purpose the world was created, and now it can become revealed through the sense of the tribe of Judah, Yehuda, the Mashiach himself, Mashiach ben David, who has the epitome of the ability to express godliness through the words of the new dimension of the Torah that he will reveal. The very redemption is called the heart being able to reveal itself fully in words. So that never was Hashem able to reveal the depth of his heart, just like a human being is never really able to reveal everything that's in the very deepest point of his heart verbally. And the redemption of the Mashiach, and this itself is the new dimension of the Torah Chadasha Me'itit, they say, that the very depth of the heart of God, the creator of the universe and the giver of the Torah, will be able to reveal itself in words to the Jewish people and to the whole world with the coming of Mashiach. That's the final sense of Yehuda. So these are the five tribes that all together relate. Now we have these two meanings to them. At one time they all combine to manifest the simultaneous appearance and disappearance of Moshe. But really, this whole panorama is the flowchart of the senses which are represented by these five tribes. All of them, Moses is seeing with the sense of sight. He's foreseeing the coming of Mashiach in this order of senses, the sense of Dan, and then what's more, the Roges, the holy anger, and the sense of the laughter, and then the sense of the procreation, and the sense of the smell, and finally the sense of the words of the speech of Mashiach, with Moses now returning to reveal to us the new inner dimension of the Torah.
You have been listening to a lecture by Rabbi Yitzchak Ginzburg, recorded and presented to you free of charge by Galina Institute. Your donation will help us to bring an ever-expanding selection of quality audio lectures by Rabbi Ginzburg. Galina Institute is a non-profit organization, and all donations are tax-deductible in the USA. To donate, just click on the Donate button on the Inner Dimension homepage at www.inner.org. www.inner.org. In Hebrew, Galinai means open my eyes. These words are from the verse in Psalms, open my eyes, that I may behold the wonders of your Torah. Under the leadership of Rabbi Ginzburg, our goal is to open the world's eyes to the light of the inner dimension of Torah, to discover God, and to connect to Him in all that we do. As we learn from the Baal Shem Tov, spreading this light will hasten the complete and true redemption. We invite you to join the Galinai team and participate with Rabbi Ginzburg in learning, teaching, and spreading the inner dimension of Torah, Kabbalah, and Hasidut. Together, the Galinai team will change the world, bringing God's loving kindness, health, happiness, and true peace to all. For more information about Rabbi Yitzchak Ginzburg's teachings and how to participate with the Galinai team, visit the Inner Dimension website at www.inner.org. www.inner.org, or email us at inner@inner.org.